Friends, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, I know there is so much to cover. The Manafort indictment is out. I'm going to parse through it because I think it's more about what's not in it that is important. Also, the terror attack in New York City was following that yesterday. Obviously, very tragic. The sexual harassment, I want to get into that too. There's just so much going on, swirling in the air. Hollywood, it seems, is stopping in its tracks. But before we get to all that, I would just ask of you, if you would allow me to get a little personal here and tell you, explain. First of all, ask your forgiveness for not being here live yesterday. I did not miss the show simply because of Halloween, although I did have a great time trick-or-treating with the kids, and that was very nice. But we've, as a family, we've just experienced a terrible tragedy. And I'm gonna be strong here. I'm gonna compose myself. You know, I don't know if any of you have dogs. They absolutely steal your heart. There's simply no other way to put it. Now, about 12 years ago, my wife and I, before we had any kids, before we were even thinking about kids, honestly, in fact, I'd be honest, if you asked me 12 years ago, do you even want a child? I said, no, I no thank you. They're dirty. They make noise. They're expensive. And they're just more trouble than they're worth, frankly. Turn them over to me when they're like a teenager or something, or, you know, maybe in their 21, 22, and then we can talk. I'll take a kid at 22. But a baby, no, I no idea. So it was this Sam, it was this mindset of Sam whose new wife at the time was begging him for a dog. I ended up in a pet store. And there we found the most adorable dachshund puppy. Miniature long-haired dachshund. I think she was all of, I don't know, 3 pounds. She was so small, in fact, that I remember one time she got tired on a walk, and I just scooped her up, and I had one of those sweatshirts, you know, with the pocket, the belly pocket, you know. You can stick your hand all the way through. And I just, you know, she's a wiener dog. So I, you know, I put her in my pocket and I had the tail kind of coming out one end and a little nose coming out the other and held her in my pocket and carried her the rest of the way home. So our Lucy was a part of our family. She, when my son was born and was toddling around the house or crawling around the house, actually, as a baby, you know, I think she saved him more than one time from falling down the stairs. I mean, she'd growl and get in between him and the stairs. I mean, she was an intuitive animal. And to me and to Sherry and to kids, she was part human. And more than that, she was fully 100% a child in our family. So I'm going to get through this. On Sunday, I heard screaming outside. I ran outside of the house. Sherry was out there with Lucy and our two daughters walking up the street. And Lucy was in the mouth of a German Shepherd who had escaped our neighbor's yard. And that's it. There's not much more to that story that I even want to get into. We rushed her to the vets. I did some pretty epic driving. If you're a member of the Irvine Police Department, you saw a reddish SUV doing terrible things on Sunday. Please forgive me. That was me. Lucy died in my son's arms. And it's just an unspeakable burden and pain that we're going through. You know, I think if you don't have a dog, I don't know, maybe this sounds ridiculous. And I keep going through this in my mind because I have an analytical mind. I think I'm able to step outside of myself and look in. Most rational people are able to do this. And I hope I count myself as among the rational. But I, you know, I look at it and I go, you know, Sam, it's just a dog, man. It's just a dog. I mean, it wasn't your kids. Of all the, you know, my little daughter, my 4-year-old daughter was out there. Can you imagine if they had attacked her? And of course, I understand it. I get it. And maybe it all worked out the way it was supposed to. Maybe Lucy laid her life down so that so that Vera and Ava would be fine. I don't know. The part of the story, too, I just so you know, Sherry did, as soon as she saw the dog coming, she picked up Lucy, who's 10 pounds, picked up Lucy, and this giant dog ripped Lucy right out of Sherry's arms. So I didn't see that, of course. I just heard about it later. I cannot imagine even what she's going through and everybody involved. So this is what we've been dealing with as a family. I've been hanging around the house, been playing Mr. Mom. I've been hanging out with the kids, and the kids are all sleeping in our bedroom right now. It's just a tragedy all the way around. Now, there's a couple parts of the story I want to share, because I mean, I could tell you all the stories and things that we did together and remembering Lucy, but a very important part of the story is what happened after. Because, you know, I'm a big believer personally in forgiveness. I know I'm a personal injury lawyer. It shouldn't come naturally. You know, I should be out for scalps. And plus, I'm one of those mean Trump people. So, of course, I have a dark heart. But no, all kidding aside, the real Sam, I believe in forgiveness. And we know and love the people whose dogs did this. And I know they continue to be gutted by this. And I know that, well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what I know, but I know that at the end of the day, this is just a tragic accident. And I was feeling so terrible yesterday. I mean, I cannot tell you how bad I felt. I was, you know, and I still am. I'm broken up, but yesterday especially, just crying out in public left and right. And I decided to call my neighbors. And I found out, and I made the call, and I talked to the husband, and I knew that they were gutted. And I found out that basically the wife, who had made the mistake of not closing the gate, and she was out with one dog, and the other dog got out, and then the two dogs ended up doing what they did to Lucy. And so I'm talking to this man. I'm finding out that his wife is just gutted, and she's, you know, just in tears and broken up, and they're older people. And I said, this is something that is an accident, and it hurts, and it's terrible, and it's painful, but it's not your fault. It's not Nancy's fault. Not any of your fault. We just have to move on. And the most amazing thing happened after that, I'll share this with you, and again, forgive me for being so personal, but I felt so much relief after I made that phone call. And there's a lesson, there's a reminder in that, you know, we hold a lot of slights as people. We hold a lot of things in, you know, and a lot of the slights that we hold in are petty, they're silly, they're stupid, honestly, some of them might even be made up a little bit, exaggerated. And we carry these slights with us, and they become burdens. And I'll tell you, a great thing happens when you let go of those burdens. You've got to. I know I try to at every turn, and this was one of those things that was extremely difficult to do. So nothing, you know, sometimes we experience a loss, and nothing you do can change it, can bring it back, can fix it. I go through my mind, I have been for these last 3 days thinking, you know, what if? But none of that is going to bring my little dog back, who was 12, and I know that sold for a dog, but she was healthy and vibrant and didn't have any gray and just was did long walks. And she had years left. Could have watched my kids grow up, or at least turn into teenagers. Could have been there for the next chapters of my life. Could have been there with me and Sherry for important moments. This is a tremendous loss, but it has to at some point. You can't fix things that can't be fixed. And accepting them for what they are and gathering yourself up and living for the living. So this is me right now giving myself a pep talk, and I appreciate that you were listening to this happen in real time. But I will tell you, there is nothing like a dog's love. And in fact, I was just talking to a friend earlier today, and I said, you know, I love this dog more than most people. Because people can hurt you. People lie. People cheat. People will disappoint. A dog never will. I mean, there's simply nothing greater than the loyalty, the affection, the true and pure love that a dog has for his family. So we're dealing with it, and I appreciate all of your thoughts. So let's get to this. Let's get to everything that is going on, because I need to move on to other stuff. And I will tell you, let's first of all, this terror attack in New York City, another tragedy. And again, absolutely, 100% avoidable. I am struggling to understand why we are willing to bring people into this country that have it in for us. That's my takeaway here. It's really that simple. Why are we not looking into what people think of America before they come here, before we open our doors to them? This is like opening your front door to your home to somebody that wants to steal from you, from somebody that doesn't want to respect your home, for somebody that wants to do you and your family harm. You wouldn't do that. No rational actor would. Yet we do it as a country. And it simply and absolutely blows my mind. I think in all of this, as the story unfolds here, the guy's name was Saifala Saipor. He won a lottery, a green card lottery, that is part of a diversity initiative that Congress put into place many, many years ago. And it all stems from one big, terrible liberal fallacy, which is that we're better off with diversity. And I'll add a little caveat to that. Diversity at all costs. That is what this story is about. Because these politicians, and this is not even a Democrat-Republican issue, because there are so many Republicans who are absolutely 100% committed to the same idiocy, that they believe in this thing that we've got to just invite everybody and anybody we can from all over the world. And I'm fine with it. And I think the greatest lie here is that anybody who opposes this type of evaluation of those who come here is anti-immigrant. Nonsense. It's just a non-starter. Don't even go there for me. I'm not even, it's absurd. I'm as pro-immigrant as they come. But I want to make sure that the immigrants who come here want to partake in the American dream, believe in America's greatness, want to be here, want to love this country. And there is nothing wrong with that. I'll tell you one more thing. How are we as a country expect that those people that come here love this country and believe in her greatness, when we ourselves struggle to do that, when all we do in schools with our leftist professors and leftist teachers telling us all the time what a crap box of a country this place is? How do we expect to have immigrants come here and believe in America's greatness. I'll tell you, most immigrants I know are more in tune with how great this country is than Americans. You know, if you're a product of an L.A. County school education, then go over up to, I don't know, Berkeley, or name the random, you know, community college campus, you're going to leave, think you're entering adulthood at 22, thinking this country is horrible. Now, I think that's the real issue. I think that to the left, to the Democrats, and to some Republicans who embrace this ideology, I think that this is all part of their scheme to reduce. They don't believe in America's greatness. They don't want America to be great, and so they want to import America haters. They're perfectly okay with this. So we'll get to the sound bites next. I've got some great Chuck Schumer clips. And we'll get to Mueller and Manafort. There's some real gold there. I'll be back right after this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
All right, Sam Rogowski, we are back. I'll give you the number now, 800-222-5222, if you'd like to be on the program tonight. Sam at Sam Nation is my email. And I appreciate all of your patience as I talk to you about Lucy and losing her in the last segment. I'll tell you one thing here about what's going on with the terrorist attack is that the left and the media, the Democrats, are all pissed about something. And they're called, well, I'll tell you what it is in a minute, because it's not actually what they're saying. The story today is all about anger at Trump for politicizing the attack. Now, what they mean by politicizing, of course, is that Trump immediately goes out and says, "Look, we've got to have extreme vetting, and we've got to cancel this visa program, this lottery." Green card lottery, diversity visa waiver, all this. So that's what they're talking about. The Trump is politicizing this. In fact, here is Chuck Schumer speaking about this issue, talking on the floor of the U.S. Senate. Listen to what he says in regards to Trump politicizing this.
The contrast between President Bush's actions after 9/11 and President Trump's actions this morning could not be starker. Again, Mr. President, President Trump, where is your leadership? I have always believed that immigration is good for America. I believe it today. President Trump, instead of politicizing and dividing America, which he always seems to do at times of national tragedy, should be bringing us together and focusing on the real solution, anti-terrorism funding, which he proposed to cut in his most recent budget.
All right. So you get the gist of it. What I always love now is so rich is these just sworn enemies of President George W. Bush coming back and putting him up as an example of what they think is virtuous. I remember Schumer ripping Bush to shreds left and right. But anyway, that's now apparently history, and we've got a new gremlin to fight, one named Trump. So now, but to the meat of this. So President Trump is politicizing this by going to the cause of the attack. The cause of the attack is that we've got a guy here who believes his crazy religion to the point that he's willing to act on it. His name, I think that somebody was, as I heard somebody, I have not verified this, but his name has some jihadi connotation to it. I'm going to dig that up here and find that out. I got to remind myself what it is before I misspeak. But so you got a guy who's got a jihadi name, who's got, they've already been watching him, right? They know who he is. I wonder how long they've been watching him, because you know what we found out today? He was able to bring in something like 22 family members. That's what they're talking about when they talk about chain migration. Somebody comes over, they get They get the green card. They get the visa to come here. And then they start bringing their family members one by one. I wonder how many other people in this chain are here and have similar ideological beliefs. Because it's the ideological belief that caused this. I mean, he's out there to destroy our country, to hurt our country, to fight jihad on the streets of New York City because we're a symbol of democracy, we're a symbol of prosperity, and we're the foreign enemy of ISIS. So there you go. So that's Trump politicizing it. By the way, Chuck Schumer would never politicize anything. In fact, have a listen to him here right after the Vegas shooting.
We can't banish evil or madness from the earth, but we sure can do what we can in our power to make our country a safer place. We need common sense reforms. Too many Republicans in Congress have tried to enact the dream agenda of the NRA and the gun lobby. They've pursued a national concealed carry law. Can you imagine if that law passed? And what about gun silencers? There's a move actually in this Congress. It's in the House right now. I'm sure it has support here on the other side of the aisle in the Senate to make it easier for citizens to acquire silencers. Why?
That's 48 hours after the shooting in Vegas. So look, it's politics, right? Both sides are going to say the other is politicizing something. I get that. The real story, I'm going to tell you right now why the Democrats are so peeved. They're peeved because we're not talking about Manafort. We were supposed to be talking about Trump Russia. We just had this giant indictment come down, and we're supposed to be preparing impeachment papers to get Trump. And instead, we've got a dang terror attack that again puts Trump center stage and honestly makes his policies starting to look reasonable. I'll play some clips to back all this up. Don't go anywhere. We have John Wolf up next with the news. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Looks like pretty not good for the Dodgers. Where are we? Bottom of the fifth? 5-0. I have my wife and kids at the game. They're so lucky. No, I'm so happy to be here talking to you. But they all went to the game today, and they are there watching it. And I'm getting text updates, and apparently everybody is at the stadium, right? So texting, it's like impossible to get through. So I get them delayed. Don't worry, I've got it up here on the screen. I'm watching it. I'm keeping track. So exciting! We've got to win this thing. But it's Sherry says there's a bunch of people on base right now. So I don't know if. Something will shake through. At any rate, welcome back to the program. We got 800-222-5222 is the number. Sam at samnation.com is the email. We were just talking about all the upset Democrats out there talking about how Trump is politicizing this terror attack that happened yesterday in New York City. A gentleman named Saifullo Saipor, who was a immigrant from Uzbekistan, a sworn jihadi, comes to this country on a special visa, a diversity visa, got a quick start into a green card, and now turns out brought over 22 of his nearest and dearest family members. That's a lot of family, by the way. So I wonder how many of those people are here and hate us and want us, want to hurt and maim us as we walk down the street minding our own business. It's a valid question. Trump is asking it, and he's getting some blowback. Normal stuff. Here's a little taste of it from Jim Acosta talking with Brooke Baldwin on CNN today. Listen to this.
I think President Trump, Brooke, now has the world record for injecting politics into the aftermath of a terror attack. That is exactly what has happened in the last 12 hours or so, as the president has been tweeting about this. And then if you look at his comments that he made at the beginning of his cabinet meeting, in addition to regarding the U.S. justice system as a joke and a laughingstock, he also called for sweeping changes to the nation's immigration system. So the president is playing politics with this.
Well, first, let's get to the substance of this, because obviously this is grandstanding on Acosta's part. I watched the press conference, and I know you did too. You may have. Trump is Trump. Trump is calling it what it is. It's a disgusting terrorist attack. This is a guy that came to this country, and we didn't screen him. We ought to. And by the way, we have a problem. We're inviting people over here in real time as a consequence of a stupid policy that we put into place, where we're so obsessed with getting diversity immigration that we're not looking at the people that we're bringing over. It is literally like we have ostrich head in the sand syndrome. That's where we're at. And Trump's calling us out on it. And the left is going into a meltdown. This is attacking one of, their golden pillars of leftism, which is diversity immigration, diversity, multiculturalism. This is what's destroying Europe. And it's not diversity per se. It's that the diversity that resulted is almost entirely from very fundamentalist Muslim countries, and their religion and their culture is absolutely at odds with a liberal, small L, Western civilization. You've got a religion that at its fundamental basics wants to kill anyone who doesn't believe in that religion. I think that's a problem. Don't you? But no, we can't talk about that because it's not politically correct. And the president is politicizing it when he's saying, hey, look, another example of another guy that's come down and done this harm to us. We let him through the front door. It really is tragic. And the tragedy here is the absolutely impossible, just unwillingness of many politicians and many of the media to recognize that and to accept it. And I think it's starting to come around. But by the way, the thing here is that when Trump is speaking in those plain and frank terms, Acosta might not like it and Schumer might not like it. You know who likes it? I bet a lot of American voters like it. So it really doesn't matter what these people think. And of course, the Manafort thing. It's now second page news. No, it's not. I'm going to get to it and I'll do that here in a little bit. Back right after this, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Hi, Sam Rogowski here. So, Jillian Barbary and I, we don't agree on much. Well, we do. We love our kids and we love our pets. And we also love our personal injury attorney, James Bergner, right? He's our guy. And you've just heard Jillian talk about him. Let me talk about him for a minute. James is a great guy. If you have been in an accident, if you've been injured, if you've been hurt, truck accident, motorcycle accident, pedestrian accident, somebody texting and walking, walks into you, knocks you over, whatever it is, call James. He's easy to talk to. He'll go take you through everything. He'll tell you what you need to know and help you if you need helping. And it's an easy phone call. Plus, it's free. That's the best part about it. So don't hesitate. Keep his number handy. Keep it with you. If you or a loved one need somebody to talk to, James is the guy. 800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. And what else can I tell you? Look, you want a competent lawyer, this is the guy. We trust him here on the program, and you should too. Keep his number close. 800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Also, it's got a website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. And, I was just mentioning a couple segments back that part of what really is irking the media right now and the Democrats is that just as Bob Mueller comes out with his first indictment in the Trump-Russia probe, what happens? We have a terror attack and the entire conversation shifts, okay? Shifts to a real issue. In fact, a core campaign issue of Donald Trump's, which is not good. That's not how the left wanted this talking point to go. They didn't want the conversation steering into Trump territory. They wanted to steer it into anti-Trump territory. Here's a little slip of the tongue from Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat from Texas, talking about the New York City attack, distracting from the investigation. Listen to this.
Rather than bringing the country together, there's a politicizing calling out names of members, taking away from the conspiracy charge against Manafort, taking away from the conspicuous collusion with Russians that George Papadopoulos has indicated. They wanted dirty stuff on the opponent. They wanted to work with Russia. They wanted to work with Putin. And they wanted to conspire against the United States of America.
Well, there's a lot there. You know, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, if you know her, she's never at a loss for words. I love that, by the way, it's bringing the country together. The Democrats only want to bring the country together when it suits their agenda. I mean, this whole not my president nonsense hasn't exactly helped in bringing national unity, guys. Just saying. But you see what she did there? Rather than bringing this country, there's politicizing, calling out names of members. She's talking about Trump slamming Schumer for bringing about. Schumer's the one who sponsored the bill that brought about this visa program that put this guy in this country. So, of course, Trump, true to form, he's out there, you know, tweeting and getting under Schumer's skin, which is part of the reason why Schumer went at him with double barrels. I love it. This is classic Trump. And you see, again, what he does, he's got this stick. And you can call it unpresidential all you want, but it's brilliant because he's got this stick and he just pokes these guys. He just pokes them just enough to irritate them. And then they go spout off this type of stuff. Trump's Twitter gives me more sound bites on this program than anything else. Because he'll tweet, get under their skin, and then they go and start foaming at the mouth like this. Yeah, this actually, what Sheila Jackson Lee says here in her statement is really funny, though, because it goes to the heart of the misunderstanding of what this Trump conspiracy indictment against Manafort thing really is. Which it has nothing to do with the Trump conspiracy. So at the top of the hour, at 8 o'clock, I'm gonna get to this. I'm gonna break the whole thing down for you. All right. I've been watching the news. You know, I've been at home quite a bit, watching everything and following. Nobody's really getting into the details of it because everybody's got their take that's so ideological, and it's either Trump is good and Trump is bad. But I'll get into all the details for you. So that'll be at the top of the hour. But I want to talk about Hollywood too for a second because this is just nuts. So don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KVC.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, I'm at home. I'm grieving the loss of my dog. And then on top of everything, I find out that they're canceling House of Cards. That news got dropped on me, too, this week. I love the show. It's pure fantasy land, of course, because House of Cards has nothing to do with the reality in D.C., maybe a little bit of the cutthroat stuff. But no, it's fantasy because it's all these people are so Machiavellian and brilliant. Which is not the case. Most people that I have met in D.C. are absolutely brain dead. They are so dumb, they wouldn't even be capable of half the scheming that goes on in this show. They're just guided by pure self-interest. You got to trust me. You'd be surprised. If you work in a medium to large company that's competitive, and being an executive in that company requires, I don't know, a certain amount of brains, you'd be shocked by what you'd see in the halls of Congress. Anyway, okay, so they're canceling House of Cards. By the way, there's two things going on. They're canceling the House of Cards, but they've put a stop to filming from this last season, all because of allegations that have surfaced about Kevin Spacey, who's the star of the show, a great actor, no doubt. And a series of young men have come forward. Well, they're not young men anymore, but they were young at the time. They were propositioned by Kevin Spacey at various points in time. I believe most of these allegations are quite old. Um, and And I, but my interest here, I'm, can we just stop for a second on all this, this accusation business? I thought we were a country that prided itself on certain amount of law and order where you're innocent until you're proven guilty. I am absolutely blown away where that allegations come out and immediately, I mean immediately, careers, lives, people's financial fortunes are thrown out the window. I'm not saying, look, I'm not protecting him. I don't know what happened. But, and I can't believe, look, this is me protecting a Hollywood liberal. So I, you know, stand back, everybody. Just give me some space here. I don't think that an allegation alone is enough to terminate somebody's life, practically. And I understand he's admitted to it. He came out and said, whoa, I'm gay. That was his response to this. So I guess that's like the worst kept secret in Hollywood, right? Is Kevin Spacey's homosexuality. I don't know. I don't really care. I try to look at actors in movies, and as long as they don't get political on me, I don't really care about their personal lives. But I do think it's just interesting that as soon as an allegation comes out, it's right now it's a full-fledged stop to everything. But it does show something very interesting about Hollywood. Look, if all these people are coming out are absolutely truthful, it's like this floodgate has opened. And what's kept people quiet for so long? It's fear. And the interesting thing, it's the same kind of fear. Listen, Hollywood's very, very, very punishing of people speaking out. Kind of reminds me of what happens to conservatives in Hollywood. All right, don't go anywhere. Talking about the Manafort deal up next.
Talk radio, 790 KABC.
Hi, welcome back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, look, if you're just tuning in for the first time and are wondering who this strange person is on the radio, let me tell you. I think I'm just a regular, reasonable guy. I happen to be a lawyer, and I have a firm, got a handful of employees, actually more than that, about 70 to 80 now. And I'll tell you, I love to take what's going out there in the news, everything that's going on, and I like to just break it down. I always look at the facts first because, listen, whenever you look at something that's primary source, it's a word for anything that is hot off the presses. For example, this indictment, right? There's an actual legal document that Bob Mueller, the special prosecutor, the special counsel investigating Trump-Russia, filed. And the document, it has these things on it. The things on it are words. Perplexing to some, I understand, but there's words, and the words mean something, and you can't read into it meaning that is not there. You can't. And one of the most frustrating things for me as a consumer of media is going on the evening news, even the talk shows, right? Even the people that I like, and seeing stuff totally misrepresented. Primary source material that I have looked at and read. So it's frustrating for me. So this is, I come here every night and I get to just decipher all this stuff with you. So for example, here with this Manafort indictment. Now, Paul Manafort, who was he? He was the guy that ran Trump's campaign for a period of months. Not long. Now, on the other hand, he was there for a critical time when Trump was trying to make his way through, seal the deal with the GOP, so to speak. And arguably, Manafort, as a GOP political operative, political insider, was just who Trump needed in order to stitch up the nomination, get all the electoral votes that he needed, get himself across the finish line, and patch up a few really problematic relationships with the GOP establishment. Now, those relationships, many of those are since, you know, imploded. But nonetheless, that was who Manafort was at the time for Trump. He was is still a consummate political insider. Now, he is a Republican, for sure. But I've always talked about the swamp, as Trump puts it and other people put it, the swamp, that the party affiliation in the swamp is not as important as how long and how deep you've been in it, which is why when somebody comes in, carpetbags their way to Washington, D.C., and steals an election, the swamp gets angry. Because you're not supposed to do that. They're the ones with all the power, and they're all the ones with the connections, and they're the kingmakers. You're not supposed to just come along and name yourself king. That doesn't work. So anyway, in the indictment, I read it. It was boring as hell because that's what legal documents are. They're boring. Nothing related to Trump, to Russia, or the 2016 election in this indictment. Period. Nothing about Trump, nothing about Russia, nothing about the 2016 election. The activity that led to the criminal indictment here ends in 2014. Because in each of the, there's 12 counts against both Paul Manafort and his partner Rick Gates. All those 12 counts detail certain allegations of certain acts that occurred, and the times are put in there. So that's it. This is just all about stuff way before the election. Now, I want to go back. Very important. Another primary source document. Allow me to reach into my stack of stuff. Ah, here it is. The original memo that is written by Rod Rosenstein, acting attorney general, at the time that Sessions recused himself. Remember, Sessions went to one meeting with an ambassador and immediately crapped his pants. And I'm going to recuse myself. You're right. I promise to recuse myself. I'm out. So he recused himself. And immediately upon Rod Rosenstein's ascendancy to acting attorney general, he busts out this memo, order number 3915, 2017, appointment of special counsel to investigate Russian interference with the 2016 presidential election. Now, it authorizes the following. And the first thing that it authorizes, it says, any links and or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of President Donald Trump. And then it says any matters that arose that may directly from the, that arose or may arise directly from the investigation and any other matters within the scope. Very specific and then dangerously open-ended, right? Any matters that arose or may arise directly from the investigation. It's funny because this entire the purpose of the special order, to, the order to get a special prosecutor, the purpose of it is absolutely 100% to investigate one, interference by Russia into the 2016 election, not the 2012 election, not 2014, but 2016. And what else? Oh, and, you know, any collusion between Trump and Russia to that end. Right. Nothing in this indictment at all, okay, at all is related to that, which means now that the special counsel, right, the guy that's been charged with investigating this, he's really coming up short. This is how I read it. I mean, if your first big ba-boom is I got Paul Manafort, who I've told you before, it's like the worst kept secret in Washington that this guy's a dirty cat. Laundered something like $75 million. And by the way, I'll explain the money laundering charges here for a second. So what this relates to is he's getting money lobbying on behalf of the Ukraine in D.C. So he's a D.C. guy and he's collecting money from the Ukrainian government. And some of these counts detail what? It says that he didn't register as a foreign agent. It's the Foreign Agents Registration Act. If you lobby a foreign government, it's allowed. You can do it. You just have to register. And he failed to register. And the money laundering charges, those come from him hiding the source of the funds. And I think one of the ways he went about it is, for example, with the condo sale, there was some talk of that. So he'd have an account overseas. He'd use that account to buy a condo. Then he would sell the condo and convert it into monies that were now, you know, that were now domiciled in the U.S. That's the extent of the money laundering. He wasn't doing any like crazy stuff, but that's how he was doing this. All right. So now the other issue that's come up is there's a guy named George Papadopoulos. Now, this guy's kind of a groupie hanger-on in the Trump campaign. Depending on who you ask, he was either totally insignificant or somewhat insignificant. This guy was not an important guy in the campaign. In fact, he went into the campaign very eager to prove himself. This is common practice in presidential campaigns, right? You go, you work for a presidential campaign, you hope your guy or gal becomes president, because if they do and you've been valuable during the election, guess what you get? You get a bone. What is that bone? That bone is a little treat called, I don't know, maybe a government job. Maybe you get to work in the West Wing. Maybe you get to wear one of those cool badges with colors on it. You get to walk around the White House, be very important, take selfies with the president, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? That's the idea. That's why people work on these campaigns. They are, in many cases, very obsequious, obnoxious, money kissing people. Right? That's the idea. This is what this guy, everybody I've talked to, this is what they say this guy was. All right, so he shows up to a few meetings, and guess what? He, I think, gets set up, I don't know exactly, but apparently he has a meeting with some Russian guy who tells him, hey, we've got Hillary Clinton's emails. And he goes running to the Trump campaign, apparently, so the story goes, hey, this guy, they have emails, and nothing happens of it. And he lies to the FBI when questioned about it. And that lie to the FBI is what gets him one count of lying to the FBI, which he pled guilty to. There's really no getting around it. I mean, it's a very specific law. You cannot lie to the feds. You can't even lie to a park ranger. Okay, don't do it. Smokey the Bear comes along and says, hey, did you set that fire? You better tell Smokey the Bear the truth, because if you lie to him, regardless of what your intent was with that fire, you may have just been, you know, cooking a little Dutch baby. That's it. You're dead. Okay. You're going to jail for lying to Smokey. I don't know if Smokey's is he an actual agent, federal agent? If he is, you can't lie to him. That's all I'm going to say. So anyway, this guy, what I take from this, by the way, I take from this that this is how ridiculous the whole concept of Trump Russia is. Look, let me explain this. So you're telling me that the campaign has Paul Manafort at the head of it. Paul Manafort has taken $75 million in his previous pre-Trump life from the Ukraine, from the Ukrainian government that is like this tight with Putin. They're like buddy buddies. So Paul Manafort, the Ukraine, Russia, they are like thickest thieves, right? That's the story. And I'm not even going to dispute that for the purposes of this argument. But that's it. They're thick as thieves. So then the Russian government has Hillary Clinton's emails, and they contact some low-level stooge inside the campaign and are like, hey, Georgie, we got these emails for you. I mean, that doesn't even make sense. Does that make sense to you? I mean, really? Now, I don't even know this whole thing could have been a setup too. We don't know. And the fact of the matter is, I guess what's come out of the investigation is that this contact of his had nothing. They absolutely had nothing. They had nothing to give. And remember, there's some talk that this is how Trump won the election, is he had Russia in his back pocket and they had all this dirt on Hillary, right? This is the big thing that everybody's whining about, right? That Hillary's emails, the hacked emails, they were hacked by Russia and turned over to Trump. But it wasn't through this guy. You see, it wasn't through this guy. So what happened here? It to me, it just sounds like a total, absolute, nonsensical thing. And the fact of the matter is, it's also about timing. Do you remember how this all came about, this indictment? You remember that last week I shared with you that about midweek, the Wall Street Journal put out an editorial. The entire editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, echoed by other newspapers, other news sources as well, and opinion makers, they all got... The Wall Street Journal put out a piece and said, hey, you know, I think it's time for Mueller to step down. And the reason is that Mueller was knee deep in turning a blind eye to the Uranium One deal. And the Uranium One deal, it turns out, this is where Hillary Clinton, you know, took, I don't know, 130, 40 million bucks, give or take. OK. And then suddenly, magically, the State Department put out an OK for this enormous amount of uranium to be transferred to a Russian company. Now, she got the $145 million from Russia, right? From this company. They paid her and then they ended up selling it to Russia. Anyway, long, you know the story. But the interesting thing is Manafort worked for two different companies. He did lobbying on behalf of two different companies as part of this. They're called Company A and Company B in the indictment. And Company A in the indictment is none other than the Podesta Group. Now, the Podesta Group, they did work for Manafort's Ukrainian company, the Ukrainian wing of this enterprise. And they're also the same company that lobbied on the Uranium One deal. They're the same company that lobbied Hillary Clinton. Podesta is a big time, Tony Podesta, big time Democratic operative and brother, right, of the chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign. So now this whole thing that Mueller has turned a blind eye to with Hillary is now woven into the fabric of this problem with Manafort and with Trump. And they're saying, well, wait a minute. You've got a problem here. You've turned a blind eye. You were part of the FBI. By the way, you've got the strange guy, you know, the spy who issued a Trump dossier. And it sounds like it was all just made up and everybody knew it. And yet you guys played along with it. It really sounds like you took a side way before this thing ever caught the public eye. And immediately as this Wall Street Journal editorial piece comes out, what happens on Friday? We get a leak. And what's the leak? The leak is, hey, we just got charges. Mueller has his first charges and the individuals are going to be arrested on Monday. By the way, where do you think that came from, that leak? I'll tell you what I think. I think it came from Mueller himself or somebody associated with Mueller. And you know how I know? First of all, grand jury proceedings sworn to secrecy. So it might have been one of the jurors. I don't know. Might have been the judge. But, you know, you remember who's Comey's number one homie? Mueller. And remember, yeah, you remember Mueller? You remember Comey, how he enjoyed leaking, using his friend to get out, you know, unflattering news about Trump? Mueller knew that he had to turn the conversation around. So he had to file these charges. His hand literally was forced to do that. I need to explain more about this because the timing of this is so crucial. Don't go anywhere. I'll get into more detail on this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News, talk, evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Looks like the Dodgers got a run, so that's good. They got to keep it up. I know they got people on base, but they've got to, guys, make it happen. All right. Now, speaking of this indictment, long-awaited indictment by Bob Mueller, the special prosecutor appointed to investigate Trump-Russia collusion. I was just explaining how this indictment is really all about nothing related to Trump, Russia, or the 2016 election. But I also think the timing of it is really interesting because we had that Wall Street Journal piece that came out and it said what? It said, hey, Mueller, we think you ought to resign. We ought to resign because you're too close to this as the former FBI director who was charged with investigating the Uranium One deal when Hillary Clinton was perhaps accepting some money from a company at her foundation and then turning around, making a very favorable decision, allowing that company to sell itself and along with a significant portion of our uranium reserves to Russia. That basically got swept away and under the rug, so to speak, during Mueller's tenure. And also the FBI apparently was in cahoots with this British spy, this Christopher Steele guy who wrote the infamous Trump dossier that turns out to be pure fiction. But the FBI yet was willing even to bring him on, pay him for his services so they could figure out more stuff about Trump. Anyway, the point being is that the FBI under the Obama administration was actively investigating Trump in order to what? I think to eliminate him as a political opponent, right? They had to have their gal Hillary win the race. It was a classic and horrible misuse of the powers, the executive presidential powers, and for political purposes. So this editorial comes out, and it's devastating because so far we've only heard talk of, right, what, Mueller, you know, Trump better not fire Mueller or there'll be hell to pay. And Congress people getting up and saying, oh, don't you even think about it, Trump. Don't even think about firing this Mueller. He's a saint. He's a Boy Scout. He's out there doing God's work. You better not fire him. So all of a sudden, the Wall Street Journal, right, no giant friend of Trump's, comes down and says, you know, maybe this Mueller guy needs to step aside. He's a little deep. And you're telling, the next day we got a leak come out. And the leak is that Mueller's got an indictment coming down. I'm telling you, the timing, I said it last week, I'm going to say it again. I don't believe in coincidences. I think that who's got what to gain? I think Mueller saw immediately all of a sudden a tide turning against him. He's got, I better take control of this narrative. And I think two things. I think one, that if that editorial and that push hadn't come, that the indictment against Manafort would not have been filed last Friday. I firmly believe that. So I actually think the charges that appeared here, of course, it doesn't matter if Manafort's guilty of these things or not. It doesn't matter if he did these things or not. It doesn't matter if they have an assumption that they did. I'm firmly convinced that they've already sat down with him previously and said, listen, Mr. Manafort, look at all these things we found. Now's your time to cooperate. And he's going, I got nothing. Yeah, it's true, whatever. Or no, I'm not going to express myself about these things. Talk to my lawyer, but I got nothing for you. They go, well, we're holding this sword of Damocles over your head. And the sword of Damocles dropped not because Bob Mueller got tired of Manafort's evasions, but because what? He had to show that he was doing something. So what we know that as of Friday, let's say Monday, the best that the special prosecutor had, the best thing that Bob Mueller had here was tax evasion. And failing to register as a foreign agent back in 2012 to 2014. I think that's fairly minimal stuff. And I think it also shows how little they've got. So I think the way I read it is, as of right now, Mueller's got nothing. He's got Manafort. He's got Rick Gates, who's even a more tangential figure in this. He's Manafort's partner. And then he's got, completely separately of all this, he's got George Papadopoulos, who I talked about earlier. I'm going to get a little bit more into him because he did plead guilty to lying to the FBI about a meeting with some Russians who had dirt on Hillary. So let's talk about that a little bit. Totally fascinating stuff. But again, what a circus. Oh, my goodness. All right, don't go anywhere. We got the news up next with John Wolf. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Bottom of the hour, I'm talking about the indictment in the Trump-Russia investigation. The first scalp is Paul Manafort and his partner Rick Gates. 12 counts, including money laundering and failing to register as a foreign agent. Now, this is not a foreign spy, by the way. This is very important. This is a lobbyist for a foreign entity. So if you want to represent another country in the United States, like if the Czech Republic hired me to do PR for them, which they would never do because I would sink the entire reputation of the country. But anyway, if they hired me to do that, paid me money, I would have to file a form that says I'm doing this. I'm taking money from the Czech Republic. Anyway, by the way, I spoke to a number of prosecutors. Everyone that I've said is this is very rare. This is very rare for the feds to ever file charges against somebody for failing to register as an agent. Because apparently here what happened was is Paul Manafort didn't file as an agent and then went back to file later. And a lot of people do this. They correct the mistake. Most of the times, even when people are caught, they're caught not registered. All the feds want for them is to go and pay a fine and register. And that kind of that cures it. So it is an unusual thing. And again, it's an effort to add counts. This is a classic thing that prosecutors do. If you're a prosecutor, you're listening to me, you know what I'm talking about. 12 counts sounds a lot scarier than four. And so you'll see these indictments, these big paper stacks of, you know, of allegations. That's really what they are. And indictments are allegations. Criminal acts that are alleged to have occurred. And what they like to do is they like to pad this with a lot of stuff. And so even something that he, and by the way, he may not get convicted of it because he actually went back and fixed the problem beforehand. So it's an interesting thing. But all of this, what does this all mean? The media is still tying this all back to Trump, even though there's nothing in this indictment related to Trump, related to Russia, or the election. Why? And that's because no one wants this to die at all. They want this to be, this is a core foundational principle of the Resist Trump movement. They need to delegitimize the election. They need to destabilize Trump. They need to have him wounded because God forbid that Trump be effective. And everybody knows that if you're under fire for conspiring against the United States, well, you can't be very effective as president. So this is all part of a plan. And it has been from day one, which is probably why I'd be so upset if I were Trump at this entire shenanigans from having happened in the first place. And by that, I mean the appointment of the special counsel, Bob Mueller. Yeah. Okay. So the other guy, Papadopoulos, who is he? Hanger on. I explained a couple segments ago. He's just a guy that came to the campaign. He gets contacted by somebody who may or may not actually have been a real person in the know, but he's some Russian guy. I read somewhere that it was a professor of sorts. And this guy contacts Papadopoulos and purportedly says to him, I have some of Hillary Clinton's emails. Are you interested? And he goes, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then he may or may not have gone to the campaign and said, hey, I've got some emails. Now, what he told the FBI, he lied about when that meeting happened. You can't do that. And that is the one count of lying to the FBI. You know what that count is about, by the way? That's not about an actual intention to prosecute this guy. That is all about getting him, twisting his arm to be a cooperating witness. But it's very odd. It's actually kind of difficult. It's tricky. I'll say this. As a lawyer, when you twist somebody's arm, as a prosecutor, if you twist somebody's arm who's already pled guilty to lying in the first place, it makes that person a very difficult, reliable, cooperating witness. Yeah, I mean, it does. It does, because the defense can always say, hey, that guy's a liar by his own admission. He pled guilty to it, for Pete's sake. So that thing's going to get tricky. All right. Oh, Dershowitz has some great stuff. Alan Dershowitz, noted law professor, total liberal, and unexpected some actually pro-Trump positions. Well, I'll play that for you in a bit. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky here for my friend, my attorney, sweet James Bergner. Now, look, if you've been in a car accident, motorcycle accident, boating accident, I don't know, railway accident, any type of accident where you've been injured, here's what you need. You need to call James because you do not want to go at it alone. Don't try to do it yourself. This is not a backyard fix-it project. This is the law. And most of the times, if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to get screwed. So don't get screwed. Call James. Have him guide you through it. He'll help you. He'll talk to you. He's a great human being. Not just a lawyer. He's actually got a great heart. He'll listen. He'll care. And he'll take care of you. His phone number, it's super easy. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Call him. All consultations are free. You don't have to pay him any money up front. It's a no recovery, no fee contract. So if he only gets paid if he gets you paid. That easy. That simple. 1-800-881-2021. And then also, he's got a website. Check him out there. SweetJames.com. All right. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. You know, I have another observation about this indictment. And it's a prosecutorial tactic that I particularly loathe. I call it wealth shaming. Now, what do I mean by this? In this indictment is an almost unnecessary laundry list of lavish spending. Ah, Sam, what do you mean? It's important. There's money laundering going on. Yeah, but the way I'm reading it here is it's almost a gratuitous description of this guy, Paul Manafort, living high on the hog. And it brings to memory one of what I think just is a really sloppy case of justice meted out to the Tyco CEO, Dennis Kozlowski, some years back. I don't know if you remember this case. But this is the famous, I don't forget how much it was, but I don't know, $6,000, $7,000 shower curtain case. Prosecutors spent most of their time, instead of proving that he, you know, stole money from the company, they spent most of their time talking to 12 angry New York jealous communists on the jury about this guy's lavish spending. $1 million birthday party for his wife, private jets, $7,000 shower curtain. I shouldn't be finding out about Paul Manafort's, I don't know, what was it, $900,000 antique rug? I don't give a crap about an antique rug. It doesn't matter. Did he launder money? Yes or no? Okay. Brought it over, sold some stuff, fine, whatever. But I think it's all in there because it's actually a signal. Because who ends up on a jury? Regular people. And what do, you know this, what do regular people loathe? Rich guys. Rich, evil, bad Republicans, especially. Those are the worst. And it turns it's extremely prejudicial. If I were a judge, I wouldn't let any of this crap in. None of it. And why? Because it just comes down to the facts of the case. Like with Kozlowski. I mean, you don't have to prove intent. Like, you don't have to prove a motive. You know, okay, the guy stole money from Tyco. Did he do it because he wanted to buy a $7,000 shower curtain? Is that why he did it? Wait, that's irrelevant. It's irrelevant to the charge. But prosecutors do it all the time. They do it all the time to poison juries. Very, very, very sloppy. It's a vilify the rich argument. And I don't like this at all. By the way, let me go to the sound bites here for a second. Dershowitz is talking about Mueller and his experience with him. I'm out of time now in this segment. I'm gonna play this right when we get back. Just interesting because Dershowitz had a case where at the time when Mueller was at the head of the FBI, they apparently met with him. He and his co-counsel met with Dershowitz to discuss pending charges against a client of theirs and were really surprised by something that Mueller said. Got very defensive about a particular point. And I think it's worth just explaining for a second so you understand what this really means in legalese. All right. Well, no, not in legalese. I want to explain the legalese and I'll use plain English. All right. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC. KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, I mentioned right before the break that Alan Dershowitz was sharing an experience that he'd had with Bob Mueller some years ago, and Bob Mueller was head of the FBI, and Alan Dershowitz and his partner, his colleague, were representing a client who had pending charges against him. And in that conversation, they had a sit down with the head of the FBI, then Bob Mueller, and had an interesting exchange. Listen to this. This is Dershowitz recounting the story on Fox America's Newsroom with Bill Hemmer.
You said Bob Mueller's a zealot.
He is.
And you were emphatic about it.
He is. I had experiences with him.
What kind of experience?
Well, I had a case, and my colleague Harvey Silverglade and I went to see him in Washington, and we started to talk about prosecutorial and misconduct by the FBI, and he cut us off. And he said, it's a non-starter to talk to me about FBI misconduct or prosecutorial misconduct. It's a non-starter. He doesn't want to hear about that. He is in the business of protecting the FBI, protecting prosecutors at all costs.
I would argue then that's probably what makes him good at his job. Is that wrong?
It makes him effective at his job. But the job of a prosecutor is to do justice, not to get as many notches on his belt as possible.
If I was answering that last question from Bill Hemmer, who said, I would argue that's probably what makes him good at his job, is that wrong? I would have been less diplomatic than Dershowitz was, because I would have said that's actually totally wrong. And the reason is that a defense attorney, a criminal proceeding, a defense attorney has a different duty than a prosecutor. The prosecutor's duty is a little bit higher, a little bit more loftier than just convicting his target. Now, if you're, let me say this first. If you're a criminal defense attorney, what's your job? Your job is to get your client off. That's it. Period. Your job is to get a not guilty. But the law, and this is not some moral code, this is enshrined in the ethics rules in every jurisdiction that I'm familiar with. So these are the rules, these are the laws that govern lawyers and tell lawyers how to act. A prosecutor has a duty to see that justice is met, right? To find justice, to seek out the truth. If a prosecutor finds out something that is exculpatory, that puts the defendant helps the defendant, right, in the case, the prosecutor has a duty to turn that over. And if you remember, for example, the Duke lacrosse rape case, that's a very famous example of a prosecutor who went absolutely bananas and hid evidence from the defense team and caused an enormous, unspeakable amount of pain to a bunch of innocent guys who got charged and prosecuted, and all came out in the end and bad news. But that's a bad prosecutor. And this is absolutely not good, if it's true. Now, this all ties back into a piece that I have here in my stack of stuff all the way back from the 19th of October. And it's a piece in The Hill that says, judging by Mueller's staffing choices, he may not be very interested in justice. And it talks about a number of the prosecutors on his team. One of them is a guy named Andrew Weissman. And he's been described as Mueller's pit bull. But this guy, and there's a laundry list detailed in this piece of a number of prosecutions that Weissman got totally overruled on in subsequent appeals, that, you know, the cases he got convictions on. Whole things got thrown out. He got his hand slapped a number of times. You've got people here who not only have a sharp political agenda, right? These are all people, big-time contributors to Obama, big-time contributors to Hillary and to other Democrats. But you also have a group of people who don't care about the truth. And I thought that the entire purpose of this special counsel is to get at the truth. But I think as we start to see this thing unfold, it's going to become farcical. It's going to become a total miscarriage of justice. You're going to get people, yeah, I've always said that. If you take any average American and take 12 angry lawyers or 16, however many they have, top prosecutors with an unlimited budget, and say, dig through their life, go turn their house upside down and their offices upside down and find me a crime. It's going to happen. 100%. You're going to find a crime. Pretty much every American. Something out there, some violation of the law. So is it okay to let loose a prosecutor like this and start doing this? Especially if the stated purpose of him getting hired in the first place is to get at the truth of any Trump-Russia collusion. The impression is that we're making up crimes. Like we are so eager right now. People are so eager to get Trump. They're so eager to have him hoisted. They're trying to come up with anything and ruin anybody in the process. And I think it's very dangerous. Anyway, we'll talk more about this on Friday. We're off tomorrow. The Kings are on. So go Kings, go. And then we will be back Friday at 7. See you then.